This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. A huge explosion struck a mosque in Kabul during evening prayers Wednesday, witnesses and police said, with many feared dead or injured. Police said there were multiple casualties but did not say how many. One Taliban intelligence official told Reuters that as many as 35 people may have been wounded or killed. That official, speaking on condition of anonymity, also said the imam of the mosque was among those killed. A spate of fires and explosions has turned Russian-annexed Crimea from a secure base for the further invasion of Ukraine into the latest flashpoint. It highlights Moscow's challenges ahead in a war that is nearing the half-year mark. As life in the Russian-occupied town of Kherson proves to be increasingly restrictive, more and more residents are fleeing to other parts of Ukraine. AP correspondent Karen Chames reports.
Kherson was the first city to fall after Russia's February invasion of Ukraine. At first, many residents took to the streets to protest the occupation, shouting, "Kherson is Ukraine." Kherson resident Vladimir Zhdanov said the resistance was strong until the Russians started to crack down on them. Then people started leaving. Activists who were somewhere in the city center, they went to protest for quite a long time. My friends went out every day until April. There were fewer and fewer of them. Then the Russians dispersed them and fired both noise and gas projectiles. Zhdanov said the change in his town forced him to flee to Kyiv. You lived your life, built some relationships, in one moment everything is turned upside down. You don't know what will happen tomorrow. So for us, it's like being under a hood, and it's very painful. I'm Karen Chamas.
For more on any of the stories that we are reporting, visit us at voanews.com, or you can download our app. This is VOA News. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's fiercest Republican adversary in Congress has lost the GOP primary in her state. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney has lost to Harriet Hageman, a rival backed by the former president. Cheney says she could have easily won had she gone along with Trump's lie about the 2020 election.
No House seat, no office in this land is more important than the principles that we are all sworn to protect. And I well understood the potential political consequences of abiding by my duty.
Cheney says her work is far from over, and she's been looking ahead to a political future that could include a 2024 presidential run. I'm Donna Warder.
Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence says Republicans should not be lashing out at the FBI.
Our party stands with the men and women who serve on the thin blue line at the federal and state and local level. And these attacks on the FBI must stop. Calls to defund the FBI are just as wrong as calls to defund the police.
Court papers released Friday showed the FBI recovered documents labeled top secret from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, which had led to attacks on the agency across the country. Pence made his remarks at an event in the U.S. state of New Hampshire. Climate scientists are warning of dire consequences for the Mediterranean Sea's marine life as it burns up in a series of severe heat waves. Scientists say they are witnessing exceptional temperature hikes, ranging well above the norm for this time of year. They say marine heat waves are longer and more frequent and more intense because of human-induced climate change. This as U.S. President Joe Biden signed Democrats' landmark climate change and health care bill into law Tuesday. This delivers what he has called the final piece of his pared-down domestic agenda, as he aims to boost his party's standing with voters less than 3 months before November's midterm elections. Planned Parenthood plans to spend a record $50 million during those midterms. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
The nation's leading reproductive health care provider and abortion rights advocacy organization is pouring money into contests where access to abortion will be on the ballot. The effort comes months after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the landmark case that created a constitutional right to have an abortion. It also breaks the group's previous $45 million spending record set in 2020. I'm Julie Walker.
Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our inauguration today will therefore ensure that malaria elimination remains a priority on our agenda.
That's Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari kicking off a new program to fight malaria. Details coming up. Also, a record flooding in Cameroon's western border with Nigeria kills at least 6 people. We'll have these stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has launched a council to eradicate malaria and named Africa's richest man, Aliko Dangote, as its leader. Africa accounts for the vast majority of deaths from the mosquito-borne disease, with nearly a third of victims in Nigeria. But Africa has struggled to eliminate the disease, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The launch of Nigeria's End Malaria Council, EMC, took place Tuesday at the Presidential Banquet Hall in Abuja. During the event, Nigerian President Buhari inaugurated the 16-member committee, which will oversee an effort to eliminate malaria in Nigeria within the next 8 years. He appointed business magnate Aliko Dangote as the chairman of the group. Dangote runs a non-profit that has been mobilizing private sector support for malaria control in Africa. Buhari said the council will advocate for more funding to sustain anti-malaria projects in the country.
Our inauguration today will therefore ensure that malaria elimination remains a priority on our agenda, with strong political commitment from leaders at all levels. The successful implementation of the council agenda will result in improvement in the quality of life.
The World Health Organization says Nigeria alone accounts for about 27% of all malaria cases and 32% of malaria deaths globally. The idea to set up country-led councils to fight malaria in Africa was birthed by the African Union Assembly in 2018, with the stated aim of eliminating the disease from the continent by 2030. Lack of funding and lack of innovation have been major factors stalling progress, says Linda Ozor, WHO Malaria Program Chief, who spoke to VOA Tuesday.
For me, it represents the highest political commitment to end malaria. The political commitment which we saw yesterday translates to a recommitment to accelerate actions towards ending the disease. Malaria is not just a disease, but a socioeconomic problem. We would hope that in the very near future, we should be gearing towards our elimination goal.
The mosquito-borne disease is endemic in Africa and mostly affects children under 5 years old due to low acquired immunity. Wellington Oyibo, a parasitologist at the University of Lagos, says eradicating malaria will require a multi-pronged strategy. He spoke to a Lagos-based Channels television station.
With the approval of the vaccine last year, every other control measures, vector control, the use of efficacious medicines, the use of diagnosis to confirm fever before treatment, even going further to real engineering of the environment, will be needed. So it's going to be all tools together.
Nigeria is one of more than 20 African countries that have launched country-specific responses to malaria, including Kenya, Zambia, Eswatini, and Uganda. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says millions of children will soon have access to the first vaccine against malaria. The United Nations says it has signed a contract to spend as much as $170 million with the pharmaceutical company GSK for the vaccine. UNICEF says that will provide 18 million doses of the vaccine over the next 3 years. UNICEF officials say increasing volumes should lead to sustainable, lower prices for the medication, making it easier for countries to introduce it as soon as possible. The new vaccine is the result of more than 35 years of research. A pilot program launched 3 years ago in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi has reached 800,000 children. In 2020, nearly 500,000 children in Africa died from the disease, a rate the UN says equals one death every minute. The UN is recommending the vaccine's widespread use in more than 30 countries with moderate to high transmission rates of malaria. Cameroonian authorities say record flooding on its western border with Nigeria has killed at least 6 people, washed away homes, and destroyed thousands of tons of food meant for export. Farmers and merchants say perishable foods are beginning to rot as access to the area has been cut off, leaving hundreds of people stranded. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Commuters and merchants shout for help as they claim masses of earth and stones from a road in Widikum district on Cameroon's western border with Nigeria. In the video circulated on social media platforms, including Facebook and WhatsApp, by Widikum council officials, civilians ask the Cameroon government to help clear the road of earth, mud and stones to enable them to leave Widikum. Among the merchants is Paul Okafor, a Nigerian who buys palm oil and vegetables from Widikum to sell in his country.
Don't worry, I don't sleep outside.
Okafor says floods and landslides have blocked him in Widikum for 5 days. He says for 5 days, no vehicle has been able to leave or enter Widikum because flood waters have covered roads and landslides are pulling down hills on roadsides. Okafor said the vegetables and tomatoes he bought are beginning to rot. He said Widikum vegetable farmers are complaining that their harvest is decaying. Ando Stanislas is mayor of Widikum district. He acknowledges that his council staff shared the videos. Ando says floods that triggered landslides killed 6 people, left hundreds homeless, and destroyed homes and warehouses.
The floodplains overflowed and completely swept off houses. At the moment I speak, there are over 55 persons who are without something to eat. The council is trying to mobilize some resources, so I send this SOS to the government and people of goodwill to come to the assistance of persons who are destitute now.
The floods destroyed a 36-meter-long bridge on the River Mumu, keeping hundreds of merchants and commuters stranded on both sides of the river. Mumu, an administrative unit where Widikum is found, is a production basin for palm oil, maize, potato, tomatoes, and vegetables. Cameroon's National Observatory on Climate Change last month predicted that floods and landslides would hit many Cameroonian towns and villages, including Widikum. Fogap Patrick, Deputy Director General of the Observatory, says homes built in flood risk areas made the situation even worse.
Our projections clearly indicate that the quantity of rains that we are going to receive will be largely above the normal. And we also see cases of landslide. People build in marshy areas. What happens? Water cannot circulate rightly because the houses block even the waterways. And at the end of the day, those living in those homes are all exposed.
The government says it is educating people to stop settling on risk zones, but has not said if it will provide the food and water hungry victims are asking for. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Kenya, the declared winner of last week's presidential election, William Ruto, says he will continue with plans for a transition to office, but that his team will engage with any election challenges that losing candidate Raila Odinga might file. Odinga said yesterday he was disputing the results announced on Monday. The chairman of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission declared Ruto the winner, but four of the seven commission members say they opposed the announcement. For more on the latest developments on this closely fought race in Kenya, I spoke with Abdul Shakur Abud from VOA Swahili Service, who is in Nairobi.
Thank you very much. What is happening in Nairobi, there is a limbo, legal limbo. People are waiting to see what Raila Odinga is going to do, what case he's going to bring about. And you have also the other part, Azimio, his alliance, which also wants to bring a suit because saying that the Electoral Commission was not unanimous when the results was being announced because four of the members of the committee decided to refuse the outcome of the election. So the chairman of the IEBC has said that he went on and gave out the results. So according to the law, he is the final person to give out the results. So the question and debate is he legally bound to just give the results or he needs the agreement of the whole? He's now going speed ahead to be president-elect. He's preparing his team. They're preparing for his inauguration. He's receiving security clear information from all intelligences. So he is going ahead with his plan according to how the law says in Kenya.
Abdul Shakur, so what does the law say in Kenya? Does everything have to stop until maybe the Supreme Court makes a decision, or Ruto can just go ahead and act as a president-elect?
In reality, Ruto can go on as president-elect, and Raila has 7 days to file a lawsuit, and the Supreme Court has 14 days to come up with a result. So they have planned it in a way that by the time the Supreme Court finishes its decision, it's the time for swearing in. So what happens is that Ruto goes ahead with his plans without any obstruction, without any legal obstruction. So he can go ahead. And it's only when the Supreme Court comes out with a decision, probably then the thing stops and you call in for a new election or whatever the Supreme Court decide. But I'm talking with a lot of lawyers and talking with a lot of observers here. They are saying that they don't think there will be a same rerun like last time when they refused Kenyatta's winning. And so they're hoping that there won't be any question of bringing back Kenya to do elections for presidential elections.
In all this, Abdul Shakur, what is the mood of the country? How are people seeing this whole affair?
The country, most of the people we have been talking to believe they're tired. They're tired because the campaign was so long. They think that it is time to go ahead. They want Raila to stop and let Ruto continue. And especially they're saying that Ruto in his speech said that he's willing to work with everybody. He's willing to work with opponents. So people are saying we don't have time. What we really need is the economy to go back because after the COVID and after the election, people want to see that life goes back. Life is too expensive in Kenya. Things are becoming too hard for people. They only want their lives back and they want the economy to rebound. And they want Ruto to start working to bring back a good economical situation.
That was Abdul Shakur Abud from VOA Swahili Service. He was speaking with me from Nairobi. A Tunisian military court sentenced journalist Salah Atiya to 3 months in prison Wednesday for remarks he made about President Kais Saied and the armed forces. His lawyer confirmed the sentence to the French news agency AFP. Atiya is the latest in a string of critics of the president to face prosecution since Saied claimed sweeping emergency powers a year ago. The military court found him guilty Tuesday of undermining the armed forces and inciting Tunisians to violence, Defense Counsel Samir Ben Amor told AFP. Amor plans to appeal the ruling. Atiya was detained in June after telling the international news channel Al Jazeera that Saied had asked the military to intervene against Tunisia's Trade Union Confederation before a planned general strike. He said the army had then informed the union of its refusal of the president's request. Human rights group Amnesty International condemned Atiyeh's prosecution for his work as a journalist and said it was a travesty of justice. Health officials in Zimbabwe are attempting to contain a measles outbreak that has infected more than 2,000 people and killed at least 157 children. The country's health ministry blames the outbreak on religious sects that are against vaccinations. The government wants all children vaccinated before schools reopen in early September. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said the infectious viral disease, which causes a fever and red rash, was rampant in Manicaland province, which borders Mozambique. She said 1,270 cases and 122 deaths had been recorded in the province as of Tuesday.
All the victims had not received vaccinations against measles. Government has invoked Civil Protection Unit Act to deal with this emergency, and the Minister of Health is on the ground carrying out an intensive vaccination program. Cabinet has directed the Minister of Health and Child Care to engage traditional leaders and faith leaders in the vaccination program.
The government is trying to vaccinate all children between the ages 6 and 15 with the help of UN agencies such as UNICEF and the World Health Organization, said July Moyo, Zimbabwe's Minister of Local Government. Moyo said the goal is to finish the vaccination as soon as possible.
Civil Protection Unit met to analyze what has to be done. What they are sure of is that this spread now needs to be tackled as an emergency. We have now mobilized resources to make sure that children are vaccinated before schools open. This July and August, we have a lot of churches that assemble, and we think that is the way this measles can be spread. So we are targeting those so that they can be vaccinated.
Dr. Klopas Simbetete, president of Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians, says the government must continue talking to religious leaders of sects that do not believe in vaccination to prevent more measles outbreaks.
This is the second one, and it's sad because measles is one of the vaccine-preventable diseases of childhood. Such an outbreak really shows that things are not functioning as they should be in terms of our public health system. In this case, you realize that the majority of children that are being affected belong to a certain religious sect. And sadly, this religious sect does not consent to vaccination of children.
A previous measles outbreak, mainly in Manicaland province in May, affected 137 people and caused about 20 deaths. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Somalia's government this week announced plans to crack down on so-called shadow courts run by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The country's interior minister acknowledged that many Somalis go to the militants for justice because Somalia's legal system is too weak. But experts on Somalia say closing the shadow courts will be no easy task, as Mohamed Hussein reports from the capital Mogadishu.
Somalia's new Interior Minister, Ahmed Mualim Fiqi, said this week the government plans to wage war against so-called shadow courts that Al-Shabaab runs in and around the capital Mogadishu. He said the government will close the Al-Shabaab courts within the next 2 years.
In the Basra,
he says there are people who go to terrorist Al-Shabaab courts to seek justice due to a lack of enforcement of the government court's decisions. He says we will close the Al-Shabaab courts around Mogadishu, including the one located in Basra and on the outskirts of Dainila district of Mogadishu. Omar Mohamud is the senior East Africa analyst for a research organization, the International Crisis Group. He told VOA the group has invested in its justice sector and primarily focuses on land and contract disputes.
For those using them voluntarily,
Pull factors include a reputation for lower levels of corruption, less discrimination based on clan, and high enforcement capacity compared to the government system. And the courts themselves are not always that sophisticated, and the threat of brutal force underpins them. But at the end of the day, they have shown to be more effective in addressing the needs for some populations.
Matt Bryden is a Horn of Africa analyst based in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. He says the courts also operate in a way more accessible to many Somalis by invoking Islamic law. Cracking down on the courts will be a formidable challenge, he says.
First, the federal and state governments are going to have to earn the public trust in the state-run judicial system, because that is still in its infancy and widely perceived as inefficient and corrupt. So that has to improve. Secondly, they have to be able to protect citizens from Al-Shabaab violence, because the jihadist courts work essentially like a protection racket. Either you obey their summons and you abide by their rulings, or Al-Shabaab will hunt you down and mete out punishment, even in areas under government control.
Abdirazak Adan is Executive Director for Foresight Africa Research and Policy Studies. He said the government's willingness to close the Al-Shabaab courts is commendable.
He
says he believes the best way to fight Al-Shabaab courts is to get an active judicial system which works for the people and creates a friendly environment for the people who seek justice. He says it is unfortunate that everyone who thinks he lost a court case unfairly goes to Al-Shabaab courts. Since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan last year, Al-Shabaab has reportedly built schools and hospitals in the parts of Somalia they control in a bid to gain more popular support. But the group, which has battled Somali governments for 15 years, has not stopped carrying out attacks. Last month, Al-Shabaab carried out suicide attacks in the towns of Merka and Jowhar, claiming the lives of more than 25 people, including senior officials. Mohamed Daisane, VOA News, Mogadishu.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer Mokbilia Baro and our engineer Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday